This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You give me one shot here on a blue chip stock. Believe me, Kevin, the only problem I'm going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What is good, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analysts. It's the Draft Dak NBA Draft Show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. My name is Corey Teleba. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time Gim. Albert, how we doing tonight?
We're doing great. Before we started, something I mentioned to you, Corey, this feels like a big one. This feels like an important one. We think every pod that we do is important, but one where we're talking about a potential top two, top three guy is important. So I'm ready to rock. I'm excited. And let's go.
Yeah. Hell yeah. We are, we're covering a potential top pick in Brandon Miller from Alabama. He will be 20.58 years old on draft night, and he is listed at 6'9", 200 pounds, we don't have a reported wingspan yet, but he played 32.6 minutes per game, averaged 18.8 points per game, 8.2 rebounds per game, 2.1 assists per game to 2.2 turnovers per game, 0.9 steals and 0.9 blocks, shot 43% from the field, 38.4% from three, and 85.6% from the free throw line on 4.6 free throw attempts per game. True shooting percentage of 58.3, PER of 23.4, and a BPM of 12.0, which is pretty solid. Stock price preseason, this is where it gets interesting. ESPN had him at 17. SB Nation had him at 16. Basketball News had him at 17. The Athletic had him at 8. Tankathon had him at 19. No Ceilings had him at 9. Sports Illustrated had him at 28. Average price of 16.3. He came in at number 15 on the Draft Dak IPO. Things have shifted drastically. Currently, ESPN has him at number 2. The Athletic has him at number 3. Tankathon has him at number 3. Bleacher Report has him at 4. The Ringer has him at 2. No Ceilings has him at 3. Swiss Jury has him at 5. Average price of 3.1. He was 3rd on the April Draft Dak update. Albert, we did a preseason pod on Brandon Miller, and I said I had him, I believed he was a top 5 prospect at that time. I think we came away higher on him. Overall, No Ceilings, we had him at 9, at a time when Brandon Miller was not thought to be, this top prospect.
Yeah.
Now, before we get going and get started on, is his stock price too high, too low, or just right now where he's, projected to be the number 3 overall pick, potentially the number 2 overall pick, what do you think it was that people were weary of or just missed on when they were watching him as a pre-college prospect?
The piece that I wrote about him, I wrote it pretty early on in the year.
You did.
It was still like really, really early. And I think, I don't know, Corey, I really don't know what it is. I wonder if it's maybe because he wasn't like some freak athlete coming into college, and maybe people were more willing to, I guess, lean towards the prospects that were deemed as more athletic. But honestly, I'm not sure. But over the course of his time in college, I think he really did show a lot of passing stuff that maybe people weren't aware of. Obviously, defensively, he was really good this season. The rebounding stuff. I'm actually not sure why, because I think when we did our pod, both of us had him in the top five by then. Mm-hmm. And this is not like a flex for me to be able to say like, hey, you know, I've been early on. No, like, honestly, he wasn't really on my radar until you mentioned him. And then I did the deep dive and then I wrote the piece and then we did the pod. So I'm not even going to pretend like I was like on him on day one. But yeah, I'm honestly not 100% sure, Corey, but I do wonder if it was the athleticism piece where people wanted to lean more towards guys that were a little bit more athletic. I'm not sure.
See, yeah. And I get it, because he's not like an eye popping athlete.
Yeah.
And I had this conversation. I just did Combos Court, which I don't think our episode released yet, but I brought up the point that I feel like high school scouting needs to change in the way that we do rankings, because it feels like every year in the top five, in the top 10, we have these like undersized scoring guards that are consistently ranked super, super high, right? And then they just fail to kind of live up to the expectation of what, you know, we believe that player could be. Now, I think a lot of times, like, these guys are, when we look at, like, you know, top 100 lists, top 50 lists for high school prospects, I think a lot of them are like, who are the best prospects that are going to be in college? And I think that that gives these guys a ranking, and then it almost skews the notion that we have of these guys going into the pre-draft process, because they're, you know, higher up on a list of how they might contribute as college players, not kind of looking at the trends of the league. And I feel like Brandon Miller was a guy who was almost victim to that, because, you know, he didn't play at one of these, you know, big NIBC schools, or, you know, he was not the guy that everybody, you know, was really looking towards on that Brad Beal elite team, you know, because he played with Nick Smith, and Nick Smith was the guy who has the ball in his hands at those lower levels. And, you know, maybe the speed, athleticism, strength stuff doesn't matter as much. And you could look, you know, like, you know, maybe you're more ready for that kind of load on a grand scale as somebody who's playing off the ball a little bit. He also was kind of playing a big a little bit, so you needed to use your imagination. But when you really, and don't get me wrong, like, it's not like he was some unheralded prospect. He was a McDonald's All-American, Jordan Brand classic type guy, right? But he was never looked at as like the guy, when in reality it was like, we, you know, we saw it, like, it was kind of apparent, like, he's the kind of wing that NBA teams are looking for. So, you know, and I just think he's a good example of how we're looking at high school prospects, and how I think that we need to adapt when we're looking at these preseason rankings on how we value guys, because it's the guys like Brandon Miller that are the guys that are typically the guys who shoot up boards in, you know, the pre-draft process, or, you know, during the year. It's these big, versatile, wingy guys with size, and, you know, have multiple tools and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's something that I had on my mind.
No, I think it's a great point that you bring up. And I mean, to be honest, Corey, as another great example, we just came back from the Nike Hoop Summit it's probably been like a month now since we've been back. But
yeah,
there were a couple of smaller guards there that were ranked very high.
And I just saw them again at the Iverson Classic past weekend.
And we weren't that impressed when we saw them up close. And we had some questions about their outlook and what they'll become on the next level. I don't want to name names yet, but there were some guys where we were kind of like, oh, well, okay, maybe you're ranked a little bit higher than you should. Okay,
I'll name them. Yeah. I think we're a little lower on you know, with DJ Wagner than the consensus, you know. And I think it's unfair to guys like him.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be this enormous expectation for him to look like a top three, top five pick. And I think that's going to be a high bar for him to clear. And I think he's going to go to Kentucky, and there's going to be, oh, you know, well, let's think about the Kentucky bump. Like, he was this great high school player, and we need to look at the pre-college tape and believe that. And it's like, I just, I know we all didn't see it. It's not to say he doesn't have skilled. It's not to say that I don't think he could provide value for Kentucky next year. I don't know what guard in the NBA is he going to take the ball out of their hands as a guy. And it's like, now we're almost looking like, I don't know, maybe if he like kind of shows some stuff, is it the Cole Anthony route? Like, is that like the high point for him? Right. Like, I think Cole Anthony was another guy who kind of, you know, fell into this trap and he dropped not as far as, you know, a guy like Jaden Hardy did, but he still dropped on draft night and what, you know, many people perceive as a pretty weak class overall and weird situation, obviously, because that was the COVID year and whatnot. But yeah, so it's just, I don't know. It's something I've thought about. And I think, you know, like you said, it's not to like gloat or anything, but I feel like recognizing the guys like Brandon Miller are going to be where, you know, you can really stick out as an evaluator because you're actually valuing the trends of the league more than just like guys who were like, who played well in high school.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. I 100% agree.
All right. So with that said, average price 3.1. Is Brandon Miller's stock price too high, too low, or just right?
So I had a huge change of heart the last couple of days, that I 100,000,000% never saw coming. In my heart of hearts, I truly believed that it was going to be Victor Scoot forever, and I didn't want to hear anything. And then I looked inside my heart again and was like, hey, man, maybe you should be a little bit more open-minded. So preparing for the Brandon Miller pod, going back into the tape, reading my piece from earlier in the year and thinking about exactly what you're just talking about, Corey, right? NBA trends. What are NBA teams looking for? How do you find success in the NBA? And, you know, having a really tall wing who's really skilled and gifted as a scorer, but also does other things and is beloved by Synergy as a defender. But also when he's not shooting the ball well, like just plays his ass off and grabs rebounds and stuff. So all this to say, Corey, I'm going to say too low because Brandon Miller is ending up at 2 on my board.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Big revelation. Mr. Garbage Time, everyone. Hey, man, I love that take. I love that you are putting that take out there, you know, because I do think even still, you know, that take is controversial, even though, like, you know, he's at number 2 on ESPN. Yeah. So, you know, it shouldn't be that controversial. You know, big outlets are doing it. And it's not to, you know, give into some fad or anything like that. I think there's a reasonable argument to be had because it's not that Scoot isn't a fantastic prospect. Yeah. And we don't have to turn this into a Scoot versus Brandon Miller debate. And it's not that Brandon Miller is not worthy of it or is like, I think we can't get grounded in our beliefs and stay there just because that's what we think is how we're supposed to feel, you know, like that's how you miss on guys. That's how you get blinded by some skills or inefficiencies that a prospect might, you know, have or not have that. If you're just willingly kind of ignoring it, cause you're like, he's number 2, I'm not moving off that, then I think that's dangerous for the evaluation process. And it's not to say that he might not, you know, Scoot might not end up at number 2 on your board after you kind of have that open dialogue. And it shouldn't just be with Brandon Miller, you know, maybe it is with Jairus Walker. Maybe it is with Cam Whitmore or Amen Thompson or Asar Thompson or whoever you believe in. Because look, the reality of the situation is if Victor, Scoot, Brandon Miller go 1, 2, 3 on draft night in some order with Victor at 1, chances are they're not going to be the first, second, and third best prospects in the class.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, because historically drafts just don't work that way. No matter how set in our ways we feel they might be in the moment, they just could, because there are variables, you know, and it could be injuries, it could be team fit, it could just be the prospect not living up to expectations, it could be them enjoying a lifestyle that they get distracted. I mean, they could get in trouble. There's a number of different, you know, scenarios in which our beliefs can, you know, be wrong during this pre-draft process. I mean, Ben Simmons was the number one pick.
Yeah.
And now look at him.
Yep.
And I don't think most people would blame it on injuries. You know, all the, you know, I mean, he might be dealing with them, but I don't think that's kind of, you know, the reason why we have that opinion, and the signs were there. So I just think it's valuable to, you know, have this conversation. And if you were it, if you had the number two pick, if you were the team on lottery night who got the number two pick, have that honest conversation. Like, all right, Scoot's the guy that everyone said coming into the year we should take.
Right.
Let's have the conversation. Why should we take him? Why should we take somebody else? And then do those evaluations of the guys you think could possibly end up being a better player. And, you know, I think there's definitely a case to be made that Brandon Miller could be a better player. Scoot has some real weaknesses, yeah. You know, and for as impressive as some of the things that he's been able to show 2 years as a pro already, at an age so young, there's no guarantee that he, you know, really gets to an adequate level at some of his weaknesses. You know, we're going to talk about Brandon Miller's finishing. Scoot, you know, really struggled as a finisher too.
Yeah.
You know, so these are all things that we have to take into consideration. Me personally, I think that the stock price set at three, like, I think it's an appropriate stock price.
Yeah.
For me personally, like, yeah, I'm also in the Brandon Miller at two camp. You know, I got there, I don't know, probably a month ago. And, you know, I was really asking myself, you know, am I going to do this?
Yeah.
Am I going to do it? You know, because I could just go with Scoot and, you know, that's what I thought it was going to be the whole year. And it wasn't until I went back and rewatched the Scoot tape. And I was like, hey, what he's doing is really impressive. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that I am worried about here. And I think Brandon Miller has a lot of potential as, you know, a baseline just flat out sniper shooter at 6'9". And he also has the potential to do a whole lot more than that in potential in which he showed. And, you know, I went back and watched a lot of college tape on other wings. You know, I watched the Tatum tape. I watched the Jaylen Brown tape. I watched the Brandon Ingram tape. And Brandon Miller has a lot of stuff where it's like, wow, he's really advanced already. And he was a little older than some of those guys right now, right? He's going to be 20 and a half years old on draft night. But, man, you know, the dude's got some stuff to him. But so now I'm going to throw it to you.
Okay.
You had $10 to invest in Brandon Miller, Cam Whitmore, and Jet Howard. Jet Howard, by the way, Albert, is another guy who kind of fell victim to the weird high school rankings, mm-hmm. where it should have been more apparent that he was, you know, should have been ranked a little higher coming into the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, Corey, how do I even start? So recently, I had a conversation with Tyler Wilson from Swish Theory. He actually hit me up and he was asking about how I felt about Jet. Obviously, you know, he read my article and we had a conversation, and
yep.
where we kind of landed in our conversation was that, because, you know, I've had Jet in my top five for some time now. And when I started putting words together and thinking about things out loud, I realized the reason why I have Jet Howard in the top five and him not so far away from a Brandon Miller is because I actually don't think Jet is very far away from Brandon Miller, which I understand is a hot take considering that Brandon Miller graded out as a really good defender. He had average 8 rebounds per game, but just on the offensive side of the ball, I thought Jet really showed a lot of things that if he had a full season of health, he would have just continued to show more and more. So this is really a long answer to your question, Corey, but I ended up with $5 for Brandon Miller, $4 for Jet, and $1 for Cam. Which I get it. Some of our listeners are going to freak out and be like, dude, are you serious? Cam Whitmore, $1. And I understand that, but, I'm also a human being and I have my biases and, Cam Whitmore, I really do like him, Corey.
Yeah, I know.
But then I also don't love him, and it's difficult for me in this exercise to give him more than $1 if I'm truly honest with myself and how much I love Brandon Miller and Jet Howard, and the fact that I actually do think they're pretty close. I had to go 5-4-1 here.
I'm I'm okay with that. And I'm going to go $7 to Brandon Miller.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to go 2 to Cam and 1 for Jet Howard. And like you, like I like Jet, I really like Jet Howard, and I really like Cam too. But I'm with you on, you know, on Cam in that I think he has a lower floor than people are willing to give him credit for. Mm-hmm. I think he could go to a team like the Hornets and it'll be like the absolute perfect fit. And he could be, you know, this terrific player. And I could see him being an all-star one day. I also think he could go to, I don't know, like the Detroit Pistons, where I would hate that fit because I am not a full-on buyer on Cam Whitmore shooting. And I think if he goes to a team that doesn't have a ton of spacing and he's one of the guys that are they're relying on to be a consistent spacer, I think that's a really iffy fit. And you know, he was a guy who had really, really poor passing feel. Like I think he had a 6% assist percentage or something. Like he had like 19 assists on the entire year. It was basically just tunnel vision, you know, and he could create his own shot. And I when it goes in, you know, it kind of looks like bully, like even stronger, more jacked up Anthony Edwards. Like he's obviously a phenomenal athlete. I think the defense is real. In this scenario, the only reason he's only getting $2 because I just love Brandon Miller's game more than these two guys. And in another scenario, I'd give him more. But I do think there's a real floor. Like, look, Isaac Okoro went, what, sixth? Stanley Johnson, would he go eighth?
Yes.
These guys can bust. You know, these guys in the lottery, not every single one of them are going to hit for a number of different reasons. And I think Cam kind of has that potential. I mean, look, there's not a ton of bust proof prospects out there, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Jet's got defensive worries, right? Yes. Or he's got rebounding issues, you know, some motor stuff, but he's also got a ton of positives that we buy into. And, you know, I think he's almost getting underrated as an offensive player. You know, but anyway, yeah. So that's how I'd split my money up. I mean, we have gone off the deep end for how our episodes usually go. We haven't even gotten into the scouting report yet. So
20 minutes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, I mean, we might as well, you know, start getting into it a little bit, right? Where are we starting with Brandon Miller?
I say, Corey, let's just get into the offense.
All right.
Because he's such a versatile, like multi-layered offensive player. I think we can just kind of wrap it all into one thing and then talk about every aspect of his offense that we love so much.
All right. I mean, I guess we'll start with his shooting, right? Like that's the main draw for him. He was, you know, at over 40% on a high volume most of the year. He ended up at 38%. I guess after the tournament, you know, he really struggled a little bit, or a lot of it during the tournament. He was offensively, he was not hitting shots, but the shooting's real and he's got legit NBA range. And I think one of the reasons he has such a high floor is this reason right here, right? You know, bottom line, baseline, this is a guy you could play off the ball, and he could be a 6 foot nine spot up threat with real deep NBA range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Corey, I'm with you. I think the thing, you know what I was thinking about recently, Corey? I when I think about guys who generate power from their legs, and obviously I'm not the shot guru, you are, but thinking about like guys that really shoot from their legs, I think a lot to like Allen Houston, Ray Allen, those guys from the 90s, JJ Redick, how they were like really jumping into their shots.
Yeah.
But you know, something I realized with Brandon Miller is he's a leg shooter too. Like he doesn't jump really high, but he does. I mean, the reason why he can shoot from so deep was that he is generating that power from his lower half to shoot from that deep, which I enjoyed. I really like that part a lot. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. I felt like that's what I was seeing. And yeah, man, like I think, and also if you just look at the raw numbers, like the numbers are pretty awesome too, in terms of him shooting from outside. And our absolute favorite number that we always talk about is the free throw shooting, right?
Yeah.
86% is a really, really pretty
Excellent number.
So considering all that, I just, yeah, it's really, I mean, what we're watching right now, it's beautiful. This is beautiful.
Yeah, stuff. And we didn't, I mean, nobody expected him to be this level of shooter, right? Because that wasn't what his game was predicated on. And we'll touch on that in a little bit, right? But you're right, like, you look at the power he's generating here on this shot in particular, where he's coming off, you know, one of these like DHOs or like a quick pitch, you know, from Noah Clowney, where he's just giving it to him. And then he's moving to a spot, relocating. You know, this he shows his versatility in that, you know, it's not just he's stationary. Like he could do this off of movement as well. So, the level of versatility in his game, and we watched clips, you know, while we were talking for 20 minutes of him, you know, knocking shots down off the bounce, right? He could also do it in transition, you know, in this clip that we're playing, little transition chase down block. And then we're going the other way. This is against Maryland in the tournament, spot up, splash, you know? So I mean, when I look at how many different kind of team contexts he could fit into, just based off the fact, like, all right, kind of like Jabari Smith, like where he's just going to be a good, and he gets comped to a Jabari a lot, and I don't think it's a particularly good comp, but I think one of the sells with Jabari was that this is a guy who you could put anywhere on any team, and he's going to be able to contribute because he doesn't need the ball in his hands to create his own shot or to be effective. And Brandon Miller is kind of the same way, where if he goes to a team like Detroit and he's playing with Cade and Jaden Ivey, and he could play off the ball, right? Like he could space the floor for all of those guys really effectively. And you would be super happy with that. And when those guys sit, he can run a little bit of the offense, and we'll show, you know, how he's capable of doing that stuff too. But just as a baseline, this is a guy who at 6'9" is going to be able to play the three and the four and can hit shots off the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. And actually you mentioning Detroit is kind of terrifying. I love the idea of him playing with Cade and Jaden Ivey, just because as much as, and we'll get into the passing and stuff, like I think he actually can really pass, but I do feel like he needs a little bit more seasoning, whether it's, you know, tightening his handle or whatever it is. But I think him playing with those two guys and the opportunities and the open looks that he'll get just by playing with them is terrifying. And and Corey, just to kind of go back to your point earlier about him being comp to Jabari, I yeah, I'm with you. I really kind of hate that, just because Brandon Miller can dribble the ball, and he can handle, and he can run pick and roll pretty efficiently. And so yeah, he's once again, it was really hard for me to move off of Scoot at number two because I was so set in my ways. But the more you watch Brandon Miller and the types of shots that he was taking, and then also, Corey, I don't know if you remember, but when we did our preseason pod of Brandon Miller, one of the main things that we talked about in terms of his offensive game was his mid-range stuff. And that's something that he really flashed in high school, which I think he was also able to flash in college. And I hate to beat the dead horse, because we say this almost every time we talk about scores, but in the modern NBA, of course, three-point shooting is really, really important. But something I want to bring up that Nick Agar Johnson brought up when I recorded the deep dives pod with him recently this week, he was like, well, you know, people think there's like this misnomer with mid-range shooting that they, you know, people think it's extinct, but it's not that it's extinct. It's just, it's kind of reserved for those who can actually hit it. If you can hit the mid-range, then yeah, absolutely, you should be taking it. And that's the thing with Brandon Miller. Like, we've seen a lot of clips of him being really versatile, shooting off the move from the outside, spotting up, but also from the mid-range. What he showed in high school, I thought he was able to show that in college as well.
So I actually don't think he did get to show it much in college. Because, I mean, Alabama's offense was so predicated on threes and rim. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, there are some mid-range shots that he took, and I don't think Synergy actually classified all of them. Synergy only classified 4 mid-range shot attempts from 17th to 3, the three-point line. And I do think there were probably a little bit more that, you know, they classified somewhere else. Maybe it was 15 feet, you know, and in, and that's why it didn't qualify under 17. So, but it wasn't a heavy dosage,
sure,
right? Just stylistically, that's just not how Alabama played. And shout out to Synergy for, you know, these numbers that, you know, do us so well and make us look smart. Mm-hmm. But you're right. That mid-range game was something he really thrived doing in high school. And it's one of the reasons I was so high on him, because it looked so smooth as a shot creator. And if you look at just a little face up, jab step, tough shot right there.
And
you know, one of the other things, his high school film was really hard to find. You know, it's not,
yes,
you had to like do some real deep YouTube dives. It's hard to find even on Synergy, at least his most recent high school tape is. But this was a shot that he felt real comfortable with. He was allowed to take more often, right? That's not something that, you know, it is something that they focused on in Alabama. Mm-hmm. But in high school, he's allowed to do it. And maybe because, you know, he's a little taller than his competition or whatever, but it was just something that he went to more often. And it, I mean, it's real. I mean, look at this possession here where he's doing all the crafty shimmy shakes, spin, turn over the right shoulder, mm-hmm, fade. I mean, that is a tough bucket. And when I see this going back to the high school stuff, and I start mixing this stuff in, and you're like, oh man, like I came away, I already had him at number 2, and I actually came away higher on him on my deep dive than, yeah, I remember being ultimately, just because this is like, this is legit, like, you know, go-to creation. And don't get me wrong, right? Like, he is going to have to prove that he could do this against NBA competition. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to, you know, he's going to go through some growing pains, undoubtedly. But I mean, there's just a lot to like with the way that he's able to create in the mid-range area, or at least has the potential to, is from what he showed often, you know, in the high school AAU circuits.
Yeah. No, Corey, I'm with, you know, something that I realized, just like you, Corey, after the deep dive, I was like so much higher on him. And then I made that decision to move him up to 2. And something that I realized was even the players that I was comping him to changed dramatically. Like in the original piece that I wrote about him, I comped him to like Glenn Robinson. I believe,
well, love your 90s guys.
I know I'm an idiot. But I comped him to Glenn Robinson, a little bit of like Franz, you know, Chris Middleton. And then like after walking away, I won't spoil it now, but the level of player that I ended up comping him to that we'll talk about later was much, much higher. And it's because of exactly what you talked about, Corey. You're right. The system that he played in Alabama, obviously, you know, he wasn't given a lot of opportunity, but it was still there. There were still moments where he was able to flash that mid-range stuff. And then obviously, as you mentioned, Corey, what he did, he didn't shoot. We didn't know that he was going to be this level of an outside shooter. So I guess in that way, it was a favor to him, and it was good for, it was beneficial to him that he was enabled to take a lot of those deeper threes in college and to play, you know, with the ball in his hands, because it was able to, you know, he was given the opportunity to highlight another aspect, another layer to his offensive game that was a little bit different from what we saw in high school. And so, like you said earlier, once you start combining the high school tape and the college tape, then we're talking about like a really complete offensive player, especially when it comes to scoring the ball. And you talk about three-level scoring. He's got that. Obviously, we'll talk about the finishing at the rim that maybe isn't at the same level as outside shooting or the mid-range shooting. But he also had like a nice stretch there in the middle towards the end of the year where that improved as well. So just another reason to be excited.
Well, let's get into the finishing, right?
Okay.
Because the finishing is the big question mark with him. And he was really bad at it to start the year. And like you said, it got better. You know, if we again pull up the synergy stuff, overall on the year, he was 54.3% at the rim. When you adjust that to just half court at the rim, he was 39.3%, right? And 38% on layups. So there's clearly a lot that he has to flesh out as far as his finishing. But I forgot what the exact number was, and this was, again, before that the tournament. But after, like, that first, like, 8 or 9 game stretch, I think he was, like, 65 to 70% at the rim for most of the rest of the year. So, like, there definitely were some real areas of improvement for him there. You know what I mean? Which is a good sign. That's, you know, what the type of stuff that you want to see. So let's actually dive into maybe like why he struggled at times getting to the rim. I think this is, you know, a really indicative play of those struggles. And it's a play that I actually really like. I think, you know, the play type is good, the set type, the way he's able to get downhill. You know, he's not starting initiating with the ball in his hands. He's coming off pin downs. He's getting the ball with momentum coming downhill, but he's just weak. He's physically weak right now. And when he goes up into the big, who does a good job of staying vertical, he doesn't move the big off the big spot at all. Mm-hmm. Right. And that causes him to have to fade away and kind of force up, you know, some kind of junk.
Yeah. Yeah. Corey, I think if anything, it's not even that he wasn't able to move the big. It's the big was vertical and the big still moved him, which is, you know, right. not great. And it speaks to what we talked about earlier, right? He's not an elite athletic guy. Not to say that he's not athletic, but he doesn't have the vertical pop that you might be looking for. Right. Also, in terms of the strength. Now, although I will say, Corey, and we said this before the season started, we were both in agreement in terms of that, the fact that we thought he had a really good frame.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I still believe that he has this frame where you can tell he's going to add muscle and he's going to be a much bigger guy, I think, over time. I'm not saying he's going to look like LeBron, but at the same time, I think he's going to look a lot bigger than he does look right now. And so with that added strength, I think that's definitely going to help him compensate for the lack of pop, because, you know, even if I've seen people compare him to Paul George, but, you know, Paul George was really, really athletic, a vertical athlete that I don't think Brandon Miller is. But I think the word that you used is very, you know, it's raw, but also very fair. He was weak and he did get bullied at times. And that is something that he needs to work on and is kind of, I won't say like a red flag, but it is something to note for sure.
Yeah. Like you said, I don't think it's a red flag. I think it's something that he will be able to get better in time. Maybe, you know, I mean, he played on a very spaced out offense, but I think that is going to be even more spaced out in the NBA. But that lack of strength, you know, was something that he struggled with. And, you know, maybe even like here, you know, he gets by his man, you know, instead of just going up into the help and trying to finish up and through him, he kind of hesitates, right, on this clip, and he just stops on a dime and has an up fake and ends up going backwards and settling for like a fadeaway hook shot. Also misses the corner pass a little bit, but you know, we'll touch on his passing later, which I am very high on as a little teaser. But yeah, it's just like, you know, just go up there, right? Yeah. Create the contact. If you draw the foul, you draw the foul. He did a good job drawing fouls throughout the year, to his credit. He did a really good job of, I mean, almost 5 free throw attempts a game for somebody you look at, you know, as maybe on the weaker side. that's a good number. And I think that is also indicative. And like you said, 86% is just a phenomenal number to connect on, and goes to how good of a shooter he is. Now, let's talk about some of the positives with him attacking, because I do think there is tremendous reason for optimism with him, just based on, you know, some of the flashes that we've seen. And, you know, I think this is kind of the big one. We talk about the Paul George vertical pop. You know, he didn't have a ton of these, you know, posters in the half court. And this is kind of, you know, secondary defense isn't fully set. But this is kind of the, you know, the play we're in, that huge game he had against South Carolina. And I mean, there's a lot to like here, right? Going up with two, you know, look at the crazy eyes, the Bobby Portis crazy eyes after the poster. This is a nice way to start it off.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
No, Corey, one thing I do want to say is, yeah, he's lacking strength, but also he wasn't afraid. And that was kind of at the premise of my original piece early in the season when I said that he had the sapphire eye, was that there was almost like this menacing, villain-like kind of stoic aggression that he had. You know, I didn't think he was ever, you know, ready to back down to anybody. And that type of mentality, I think, is really good. That type of aggression is good, where, yeah, he may lack some strength right now, but once the strength comes along with that type of mentality, it's going to be really scary. And, you know, something that you're showing on the screen right now, Cord, that I really enjoyed was his ambidexterity, both as a scorer at the basket and also with his passing.
Yeah.
Was really, really interesting to watch, and adds a beautiful layer to his game. I mean, I talked about Kobe Bufkin this week with Nick, and that one of the things we talked about with Kobe Bufkin is his ambidexterity and what a weapon that is. And when we're talking about a guy like Brandon Miller, who's 6'9", with the shooting that he has, and then has this type of finishing with his left hand and also passing. And even in the earlier clip you showed before, where we were highlighting his movement shooting, his entry pass was with his left hand, and it looked really, really good. And I think it's a layer of his game that I think is really important, and just once again, adds to the complexity of him as an offensive player.
Yeah, the more you watch him, the more you realize how he loves going to that left and using his left. And that clip that we just showed, and this clip that we're showing now, I think this is more indicative of the way that he is going to win with his finishing, which is the pace in which he plays, his handle, and the change of speeds and stuff. And, you know, for a guy his size, he looks like, you know, he's a 6'3", 6'4" guard. The way he gets high, goes high to low, the in and out, the cross, the reject, and now, you know, finishing through contact here. I mean, that is a high level play for, you know, a guy who was a freshman in college, you know, and he was so effective and so impactful because of stuff like this. It's not just the off-ball shooting. I mean, look how flexible and bendy he is. You know, he's... You know, it might not be like, you know, end one type wiggle, but I mean, it's pretty damn crafty and impressive. I mean, it's smooth as all hell, the way that he's able to operate with the ball in his hands, which is what gives me so much optimism about him as an NBA prospect.
And Corey, even on that play that you're playing right there, like the fact that he doesn't immediately reject the screen, but he does like an in and out and then goes into the
setups.
Cross.
We're going to talk about the setups.
Exactly. The timing and the savvy of that type of stuff, him knowing himself, knowing that he doesn't have the most explosive first step, but because of that type of manipulation and timing and setup, as you're talking about, it makes you that much faster because of, you know, once you get a guy going the wrong way, like that really helps a ton. He's incredible. He's awesome, dude. He's really
good. And this is another one. This is against Anthony Black, you know, somebody that I think mostly we consider to be one of the better defenders in the class at the guard wing spot. And you know, that's a really, really nice possession on Anthony Black where he's getting the ball and you see all of that handle, all of that pace, you know, the change of speeds, he's got the snatchbacks, he's got the crosses. I mean, creating the separation. Then back there's that left hand, right? He's back to the left hand that we talked about there. I mean, he's just a really, really creative prospect. And I think that's what we don't talk about enough with him. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't talk about enough the how much off the bounce game he has. We just look at him as this, you know, off ball shooter. And I think people are a little bit scared at this point of maybe those Jabari comps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This was talk about his finishing and his confidence finishing double overtime, right? Sick. Or this was the end of regulation, maybe, I don't, like against Alabama, and finishing with his left hand, highly contested in traffic. I'm optimistic about the finishing regardless of what the numbers say. And sometimes you have to listen to the numbers. And I think sometimes you have to trust your eyes. And for me, I'm willing to bet on this kind of stuff improving because he's going to get the opportunity to improve it. Yeah. Because he has the rest of the stuff that's going to get him on the floor. So he's going to have the opportunity to actually go and improve this stuff.
And Corey, the ultimate thing for me is, like, I get it. Like, he did get bullied at times. He wasn't the strongest guy, doesn't have the best vertical pop. But what do you have to say about that touch is my question to all the haters out there. That is serious touch with his offhand. Like, I understand the critiques about him not being the greatest athlete in the strong, but what do you have to say about that touch? That touch is incredible with your offhand. And the play that you played before where he was putting all the moves on Anthony Black and then he chose to go back to his left hand and finish like that. Like, that looks like a left-handed player going right and then having no choice but to go back to his left because he doesn't have a right hand. We're talking about Brandon Miller, a righty, going back with that beautiful spin with the left hand. That stuff is not normal. I've seen some wild takes on Twitter about GG Jackson and what he can do with the ball in his hands. And I'm like, well, how do you watch that guy and say those things, but you don't say the same things and even more about a guy like Brandon Miller, who has unbelievable handle, who is showing incredible touch when he's not getting destroyed by big guys. But, you know, when he's actually getting up there and able to put up a shot, like, this is beautiful, beautiful stuff, man. So
I think ultimately it's because people think he's older. So there's less room for him to, you know, I guess, expand his game. But I think that's silly because I think most people before the year would not have described his game to be what it was this year at Alabama.
Right.
Right. So he's shown already that he has this level that he can get to with an offseason, improvements that he can make. And then who's to say that he's just going to stop working, right? I mean, there's no indication he's not a hard worker. He was incredibly effective this year. And yeah, he might have been 19 and 20 years old this season, and GG was, you know, 18 for some of it and 19. But, and sure, like, it's definitely impressive when you play up like that. But hey, there's no guarantee that GG, if he played another year of college, that he would have improved his efficiency a ton. Mm-hmm. You know, Amani Bates did not improve his efficiency by a lot this year, even though he was in a similar situation. And now Gigi's going to have a more uphill battle coming into the NBA, his NBA career, because he does have a reputation as a boom bust prospect who is just all potential because he showed some flashes. So his leash is going to be way shorter. So I think that's kind of, you know, why when you're comparing. Also, though, to be fair, like, everybody has most people have Brandon Miller, yeah, above GG, irregardless of what that conversation is. But as you said, because of the age, people are more willing to give GG that runway to improve. And, you know, I think ultimately when you get in the NBA, like, it's nice to be young, but mm-hmm. Brandon Miller's still young. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still young and he still has room to improve, but he's going to have more of a leash to actually make those improvements, which I think is an important part of development, where you're actually going to be able to get on the floor to get those reps instead of, like, hey, potentially you're spending a ton of time in the G League, and then who knows, maybe you make those improvements, but it could be for your second team.
No, I hear all that. It's just, you know, Corey, I think you and I have never been afraid of age. We talked about this for years when Peyton Pritchard was coming in, Chris Duarte, all these older guys. We're like, we're okay with old guys. Give us the old guys. Yeah. No problem.
I'll take Tommy Haquez on my team.
Exactly.
I'll take him a color on my team.
Yeah. And 20 is not old. Please. You know, 20. Yeah. He's going to be great.
Yeah. I'll take Mikal Bridges on my team. No. Let's talk about his passing. Oof. because I'm a fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's just so crafty as a passer, man. Mm-hmm. And we talk about, you know, the setups and whatnot. And, you know, it doesn't seem like anything too crazy, right? It is just a basic, like, pass to the lob man. But
the accuracy is
the accuracy, the touch, his touch is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But I want you to watch right at, I'm going to pause the clip here for if you're watching online. I'm gonna pause it here. Watch how he gets that second defender to commit to him and step mm-hmm. up and not go with the big. Watch that right yeah. there, that
dribble right there,
that little shoulder shimmy, the extra dribble, and that makes the defender think he might actually drive, and he gets him to commit, and now it's just a miscommunication. You know, there's no weak side help that could get there in time, right? Because of just that one little dribble. And it's subtle, and you might not notice it, but it was vital to opening up the floor right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, it's unbelievable. Corey, I think what you mentioned earlier, like the whole setup stuff, that's really, really important with him. He is so smart, so savvy, so patient. The vision is there. Once again, both hands. I think it was that same Auburn game too. There was one where it's on the left side of the floor, pick and roll, just throws in. It was a little bit behind the guy with his left hand, but still, like it was in the perfect location. You know,
I think I have that one.
Yeah, it was just a great, great pass, and just so smart. And even the one we're watching here, like it the things that he can do at his size, and obviously we talk about left hand, perfect. Perfect location too, but he uses his size his advantage. He could see over the defense, see over his man. Incredible touch, timing, accuracy, all that stuff is crazy with him. And then, you know, with everything that we mentioned with his handle, like he leverages all his handle into passing as well. Like he's able to create opportunities for himself to make good passes, and it's about pick and roll. Yeah, that's exactly. It's a little bit behind, but also.
But it's yeah. But it's on time and it's in exactly. his catch radius. Like you wish it wasn't a little bit behind, but just the way yeah. it's still just so catchable, right? And I mean, look, you know, starts it off. Even the little quick pitch there comes off the DHO.
Oh, goodness. It's not a normal pass, man. Like I hope people realize it's not as easy as he makes it look. That's a great pass.
No, yeah, and I mean, just the left hand stuff. I'm gonna pull up my favorite. I think of the left hand dribbles right now, which is it's a little Nash dribble. Come out the other side, whoop!
Oh my God.
And then the spin, like that New York City point guard spin at the end.
Stephon Marbury-esque, right there.
Yep, right. Mm-hmm. Comes off. Gets Castleton, draws him. Oh, sorry. God. Shout out to Colin Castleton, friend of the program, soon to be making an appearance on this feed, I believe. But yeah, he's just an unbelievably crafty passer that does it in so many different ways. I mean, he's also just super, super good at these transition hit aheads.
Yes.
You know, not letting the ball stick, playing fast, playing with pace, playing that NBA style, get the ball right up the floor. You see your man, right? Like hit ahead, mm-hmm. which I love. I think his passing is, you know, one is probably the most underrated part of his game. And it's the reason I'm so damn high. I mean, we look at constantly these guys who have this plus size, feel and vision, and we see how they thrive, right? And he might not be as thick as a guy like Franz, but who you comped him to earlier in the year, but like stylistically there are a lot of I think similarities in the way they play. And like right here, like he's really tall, he's got good vision, he sees the whole court, and he just over his head fires to that wing, and he doesn't get an assist here because, you know, the shooter doesn't make a shot, but it's still a great pass, even if it's not, you know, some super insanely complicated thing. It's a really good pass. And he's just a smart, savvy, quick decision maker. I love this one, right? Whoop.
Oh, God, yes.
Left hand.
Left again.
With the speed, top of the key, fires right to the paint, you know, 0.5. You know, isn't going to hold it too long. He, little ball fake, knows exactly where his guys are. I just adore the passing chops from him. I think it's just super high level.
And Corey, the thing that I love the most is his demeanor about it all. Like, he celebrates passes more than he celebrates his own buckets at times. Like, this is a guy that genuinely is a selfless player that likes to pass, that likes to make these types of pretty passes. And also, to his credit, Corey, I know we're showing a lot of these like highlight reel types of plays. He also makes the basic pass as well. He'll make the extra pass to the corner. He'll make the pass before the pass. He's totally okay with all that. He's not just looking for the highlight reel passes, as some guys may be prone to do. He's just a selfless player, and that just adds to his intrigue and adds to his beauty as an offensive player, because he's looking to do the right things. Something I didn't get to mention before was at times I felt like his shot diet, or, you know, his decision making with his shooting, I thought at times was like so, but overall though, like, he's not this, like, as you kind of mentioned with Cam Whitmore before, he's not a tunnel vision guy at all. Like, he is actively looking to pass the ball and make the right plays, and it's beautiful stuff.
Yep. And again, here with the setups, the little in and out operating, quick hit, and, you know, he's able to get his guy a pretty open lane to the rim. So
should have hit. Yeah.
I mean, look, I think he can average 5+ assists per game in the league.
Yep.
I mean, not right away, but I think down the line, he's going to be a guy who is one of these kind of all around complete offensive players who it's like 25 points, 5 assists every night. Like, I think he can get there. I really do. I think you put the ball in his hands, I think good things are going to happen. And the other thing is he rebounds the crap out of the ball. If he's going to be a guy who I could foresee averaging 25, 8, and 5 in the league, you know, and I think he's a good defender. And now seems like a good enough time to, you know, talk about that defense. Mm-hmm. If I could foresee him being a two-way player who's capable of that offensively, all right. If he doesn't become a number one option, he could still live up to being a number two pick or the number three pick. He could still live up to that, because guess what? If Kawhi is healthy and Paul George is healthy, Paul George is the number two option. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's going to put up huge numbers. I think the bar to be a superstar number one option right now is so, so high. And ultimately, a lot of guys who used to be number one options are better fit, you know, are more suited to actually be a number two option. You know, I don't think Brandon Miller is a generational prospect.
Mm-hmm.
I think true number one championship level prospects are, you know, on the border of like being generationally good. And I don't see that with him, but there's only one other guy I see that with in this draft. And even that guy has some question marks on offensively. So, but I do think that Brandon Miller is a guy who's going to be a two-way player and a high octane offensive two-way player.
There's a guy playing in the playoffs right now, playing for the Boston Celtics. Guy came in as highly, you know, he was the number three pick in the draft, could really score the ball, but improved his defense over time in the NBA. Jason Tatum has become a really good defensive player, and a guy that the Celtics really rely on for his defense, along with everything he can do with his scoring. And I think Brandon Miller could be, I'm not saying he's going to be exactly like Jason Tatum as a defender, but I think he's going to be a really good one. A guy who knows how to use his length, use his size, obviously not the strongest guy, but look at him flipping the hips, can move his feet, right? Can contest most shots with his length. Oh God, Corey, it's this thing where, like, as I did the film deep dive of him, I was just falling more and more in love. And then as I'm like talking things out with you and we're watching these clips, it's hard not to fall in love with the guy. The guy's freaking good.
And even on like, I remember looking at the synergy thing and looking at defense, and like, everything is like either excellent or very good with him as a defender. The only thing that was that average was like him guarding runners. And I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. Everything else is freaking good. So I think a good place to start is I think he's going to be a good defender, man. Like, I think he's going to be a really good defender.
Yeah. And I think the way that he developed at earlier levels, I think that really has helped him develop into an interesting defensive player, because he obviously has like the wingy defensive traits that you want, right? Where he's long, he could flip his hips, he can move, you know, with guards, and he can guard, you know, those taller guys. He's going to get a good contest on you. He has good anticipation, good timing, smart guy. But when he was in high school and even on the AAU circuit, he was playing like big.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, he was playing a lot as the five, as, you know, the primary kind of rim protector. And I think you see some of that, you know, at times. Like, he averaged just under a block a game. So it's not like an eye popping shot blocking number. And I don't think he's going to be a massive shot blocker in the league, but I think he's got really interesting defensive potential as like a guy who can come over and just has good instincts to come over and help at the rim. I think his timing on contests and shot blocks is like super, super, super impressive. Like, I think if he was a guy who just strictly focused on the defensive side of the ball because his offense wasn't, you know, as far along at this stage, like, I think we'd be talking about him as like, you know, one of the best defensive prospects in this draft. Yeah. That, you know, that's kind of how I look at him. I don't think he's ever going to, like, I don't think he's going to be able to sustain that kind of like top tier defense while kind of living up to what we think he could be defensively, but the defense is there. I mean, he could play in multiple schemes. There's a lot to like.
Some of the blocks, Corey, I know you highlighted this earlier today on Twitter, some of the chase down stuff, unbelievable. Just the timing, the anticipation, his length. He's it's really good stuff. It's really, really freaking good stuff. And, you know, as you mentioned, like, look at this, man. Like, he comes from so far away, too. And it just, he looks like a pterodactyl just gliding in the air to block that shot. And just where he jumps from as well, is it's awesome stuff. And he looks huge when he's flying in the air like that too.
Yeah, so the chase down stuff, I think, is the most underrated, underappreciated, maybe is a better way to say it, part of his game.
Yeah.
And we've seen, you know, this kind of skill be really important in big moments in like playoff games, right? Like, it's not a skill that you use all the time, but I think when a guy is capable of making this kind of play as often as he does, I think it's a good sign, just showing like this guy doesn't give up on plays. Like, he gives effort. Like, even here, he turns the ball over and he goes and gets it back. You know, like, he knows, like, all right, that was on me. Got sped up, they forced a turnover on me. Yeah. We're down, big moment. I can't give up a layup.
Jeez.
And just goes up and gets it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a big time play from, you know, a big time player.
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, right, the ownership, the responsibility, the desire to go back and fight for it. And, oh, man. Hey, and like, I get it. Like, this sounds like we've just been, but this is what happens when we're talking about like a top three guy. There would be a lot of good things to talk about and good things to highlight. That's an incredible block, man. Like, he got really up there for that one. And his length is unbelievable as well. And look, he's sizing it up, and then he just goes and rips it. That's like a volleyball spike right there, man. That's like, for anyone out there who knows how to play volleyball, that's like a middle two ball, and he just absolutely destroys it. So I'm with you, Corey. This is really awesome stuff. And this is also why, like, he ended up number two on my board. Like, if it was just offense, I'd look at myself and be like, hey, man, are you good? But the defensive stuff is actually there, along with all the passing and scoring stuff. So we're talking about a player that is going to offer a lot on both ends of the floor, and why he's in the conversation that he's in right now.
And look, he's not a perfect defender. We talked about how he needs to build on his frame, right? I think where that becomes apparent a lot of times is he gets caught on screens. Mm-hmm. You know, like he just sometimes just can't get through them. Mm-hmm. And gets bodied on this particular play against Maryland on a side ball screen. Now, this is kind of where, you know, the synergy numbers can fool you at times, because this is a miss. This shot is a miss, ultimately. Mm-hmm. But it's a clean look. I mean, you know, it's over the help, but like Brandon Miller got taken out of the play, right? So it's not always like, hey, let me just go check out his synergy profile. Shout out to Synergy again. They have been tremendous help for us. But you actually have to go and watch the film and see what it tells you. And this is an area where I think he struggled, regardless if it was a make or a miss. I really think that screen navigation, and I think when he's got momentum, when he's chasing, he's really slithery. Mm-hmm. And he gets around screens. But I think when you put him in a pick and roll sometimes, he really gets caught up. And I think this is a, you know, kind of a good possession to illustrate how it could hurt at the next level, where he gets caught up on a screen and a three-point shooter just gets an open three-point look, makes him pay. And at the next level, there are so many good three-point shooters, right? That, I mean, that is just really hard to, you know, give up. This is, you know, early in the game. It's not like a big moment or anything, but you know, if this happens consistently, your coach is going to be pretty upset, I would wager to say.
Tibbs wouldn't be happy if he was his coach, is for sure. But Corey, I do want to say, like, also the effort was there though.
Throughout,
like, all season long. Like, I love the effort, and also, like, we mentioned it a couple times already, but rebounding is part of defense.
Yes.
And he averaged 8 boards a game, and he did it in big games too. And he did it in games when, you know, he wasn't shooting the ball well. I know I mentioned that earlier, but that's an important thing to me. Like, and I know, Corey, that's something that you mentioned a lot too. Like, what are you doing when the shot isn't falling? Do you just disappear, or do you not affect the game at all? And that's a big Brandon Miller thing, where when the shot isn't falling, he's still affecting the game, whether it's with his defense or with his rebounding or his passing or just the threat of him eventually hitting a jump shot. Like, these are all aspects of his game that make the defense think, or the opposing team think, because he's doing other things. And so I thought the effort was always there. You're right. Like, some of the screen navigation needs to be cleaned up, but it's not like I didn't feel like he was like quitting on plays. I thought he fought all season long, and I think those rebounding numbers need to be applauded. Like, that's real to me.
Yeah. I mean, right here is a good example of that effort, that energy. He does a good job. He gets over the screen. He stays attached, and he draws Gigi right into the help, and Gigi throws up some junk, right? Like, the effort is there. He's going to make you work. And I can't stress how important enough it is when I look at a prospect, especially a high level prospect like this, where you go, like you said, shots not falling. What am I doing to help my team win? Mm-hmm. And he was rebounding. He was making plays. He was, you know, just finding ways to contribute. He would have multiple steals, multiple blocks, high assists, high rebounds, whatever. It was just like, I'm not going to just quit playing because I don't have my shot falling. I am going to do whatever I can to make an impact. And that's, you know, one of the reasons when I look at that, I had him, you know, I moved him to two, is just, I believe that he can impact the game when his shot isn't falling. And it's not to say that Scoot can't. Obviously Scoot, at number two, if you have him there, he obviously will find ways to impact the game when the shot isn't falling, right? Like, he's in tremendous playmaker, Scoot. He is, I think, going to be a positive defender. When he locks in, he could be a positive defender. I think just all the paint touches that he gets, that gravity that, you know, he has as a driver, is really impressive, right? So it's not to say that Scoot isn't, but I just, at Brandon Miller's size, with some of the flashes of, you know, self-creation and pick and roll creation and the passing, along with the fact that he is an absolute sniper. And like, what's the thing that everybody has kind of harped on with Jabari that they gave him an excuse on in college? And now they're, you know, we need to find him a point guard because he needs to be set up, and he, you know, people were taking shots away from him. It's like, well, Brandon Miller can create his own shot. He's the one who's going to go and have the ball in his hands, in a way that Jabari didn't. So I love the kid's game. I think he is the real deal. I think he's so good. And if Scoot ends up being that superstar guy, and Brandon Miller is just like a an all-star or a high level player, it's like, all right, I'll be like, I swung and missed.
Yeah.
And that's fine, you know, but I look at, you know, the archetype of that athletic guard, and, you know, it's really hard to find success when that guy is your best player, right? Like, and maybe you're going to go to a team and Scoot isn't going to be your best player. Maybe it'll be somebody who's already on your team and it makes more sense that way, right? That's possible too. But I don't know. I'm a Brandon Miller guy.
I started
the year as a Brandon Miller guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know it. Honestly, it took me a while. I had him at five for a while. I was being patient in our rankings. I had Keontae over him. I had Jarris over him. And it hurt me a lot when I moved him ahead of Jarris. Mm-hmm. It was honestly harder for me to move him ahead of Jarris than it was for me to move him ahead of Scoot.
And we still love Jarris so much. I know you still have him really high. I thought we both have him really, really. He's going to be so freaking. Where do you have Jarris right now? Four?
Jarris is at four.
Yeah, same. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Our top fives are very similar until I mentioned Jed Howard, but yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. If you're buying stock in Brandon Miller, who may you have bought stock in previously?
So I mentioned earlier when I originally wrote my piece, I said like Glenn Robinson, Chris Middleton, these types of guys. Where I ended up is like, okay, like there's a world. I'm not one for one. Listen carefully, everyone. Not one for one. But I was like, okay, this smells like Jason Tatum in some aspects. I was like, cool. I think Brandon Miller is going to add muscle. I think he's going to add strength. He can really pass the ball. I think this year Tatum was at like 30 points, 8 rebounds, like 5 assists. And I'm like, cool. Brandon Miller can do that one day. I really believe it. And if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't have moved him up to two. So I saw some hints of Jason Tatum, saw some hints of like Rashard Lewis back in the day, but with better passing. And the reason why I said Rashard Lewis is because if you go back and watch Rashard Lewis, like Rashard Lewis was like really good about taking smalls into the paint and just bullying them. And he just had a really good mid post game and can do stuff in the low post against smaller guys to go along with all the shooting and stuff. But that's just like, for me, that's a me comp, like a 90s guy with Rashard. But if I didn't believe that there was some Jason Tatum in him, I wouldn't have moved him past Scoot. And because I do believe it's actually there, I had to move him past Scoot. And that was kind of the tipping point for me. I was watching him. I'm like, okay, I'm people might call me crazy, but I really see some Tatum here. And if there's Tatum here, then how can I not have him at number two? Tatum was in the finals last year as the number one guy, and he's still dogging it right now for the Celtics, as much as that hurts me. He's an unbelievable player. He's an unbelievable scorer. And I think Brandon Miller has that type of potential in him, and which is why I moved him to number two.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction.
Sure.
And I watched Jason Tatum for this exercise specifically. And Jason Tatum, I think, was pretty clearly the best wing of the guys I watched in the Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown, and Tatum trio of like old wings that I went back and watched their college tape on. He was the most fluid, he looked like a monster out there. His shoulders, his big, broad shoulders. He was so big out on the floor. I kind of can't believe he didn't go number one. Like, I wasn't doing this back then. Like, for me, I count Jason Tatum as a win because I was like, oh, I think Jason Tatum's clearly better than Josh Jackson. What are we doing here? like that was, I was like, who's, I don't know who would think otherwise. This is, it'd be insane. But I wasn't scouting so intently on the draft and making big boards and rankings and stuff. I was more doing like comparisons or like scouting for the Bulls or something, you know, when you know, they had bad draft picks. The guy that I'm going to say he reminds me of, and if I was buying stock, is Brooklyn Nets Mikal Bridges. Brooklyn Nets Mikal Bridges, this after the trade, he looked to me like what I envision Brandon Miller becoming. Just as a guy who's good at 26 points, 7 rebounds, 3, 4 assists, and crazy defense. And how many draft picks would it take to get Mikal Bridges right now? And it's not like Mikal Bridges was like this is like we're surprised that some people are surprised his offense. I'm a little surprised that he went off as much as he did offensively, but like I loved Mikal Bridges so much in that draft that it was crazy. Who cares that he was a little bit older? Like he said it himself, like, what are you just going to stop getting better at basketball after you're 21 years old? Like, yeah. No. So I don't know, like that age doesn't even factor in for me. And he started out with a smaller role on the Suns where he was like a 3-and-D guy and played off of other guys and just quietly worked on his game and worked on his game and worked on his game and worked on his game. And now he looks like a guy who is one of the best wings in the league, one of the most complete wings in the league. And I mean, it shouldn't be super shocking. The guy won, you know, national championships in college. He's a winner. He played in NBA finals. Like this is a guy who plays high level winning basketball. That's who I see Brandon Miller kind of playing like at the next level. Just maybe a little bit more wiggly, maybe a little bit more playmaking. But yeah, that version of Mikal Bridges, that's who I think Mikal Bridges, Brandon Miller turns out to be.
That's a really good take, and I hate you for it because yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And Corey, I do want to say, I know you brought it up recently, like in our group chat too. Like the more I think about it and the more I agree with you, these comps are important. They are important for a lot of reasons because Corey, literally it shifted my thinking. Like it, because I was thinking about Jason Tatum, I told myself it's only right that I move him up because if I'm serious about my comp, And I really do believe that there's some Jason Tatum in his game, then I have to move him up. And so the point that I'm trying to make, Corey, is that I'm sure NBA teams are like that too. Front offices are probably like that too. They're thinking about what these players can become, and then that'll probably shift and move and tilt their boards one way or another. So it is important. This stuff really is important. And once again, for all our listeners out there, this is a disclaimer that, you know, we're not trying to create one-for-one comps, but this type of stuff really does help you think about these prospects and their outcomes and their outlooks and their ceilings and their floors and all that stuff. And I think the more I thought about it, like that Tatum comp for me, I really believed in it. And it wasn't just like, oh, I'm just throwing a name around and I'm looking for a hot take. Like I started to believe it. And with your Mikal Bridges one, like that's an incredible player, right? Brooklyn Nets Mikal Bridges was the talk of the town and everybody wanted to talk about him and what he was doing there. And so these things are important is what I kind of wanted to end on. I really do think it's an important exercise.
Yeah. And look, you know, we were in Portland for the Hoop Summit when we had an NBA executive, you know, we were talking with and was like, hey, if you can't do comps, you can't be in our meetings. You know, if you can't tell me about how a guy is going to work in the league because it's already working, like, what are we doing here? You know, like, this is a conversation we had with, you know, a really, really great talent evaluator who is a, you know, a high-ranking executive in the league. So this is not these comps, you know, the reasons that we have this segment. We've been doing this since the beginning of the podcast. The reason why this year I chose to focus most of my writing pieces on direct, you know, stylistic comparisons to NBA prospects is because I really do think there is an art to doing it. And when you do it, it could really be a helpful evaluation tool. You just have to really put a lot of thought in. If you get lazy with it, then sure, like comps are going to hurt and no comp is going to be one-to-one. And that's why we call it prospect chemistry,
right,
at No Ceilings. But when you actually sit and think and try to figure out how it's going to make you better understand a prospect, it could be really valuable. All right, Albert, it's that time. I need you to sell me this pen on Brandon Miller.
For sure. Okay. I didn't know if we were going to do this part just because it felt like we did the whole pod, but it's okay. I can do it. If you're interested in a 6'9", 6'10" jumbo wing, who can handle the ball, who can, as Jalen Rose always talks about, he can dribble, pass, and shoot, and can do it at an effective level. If you're interested in a guy who can also play defense and rebound the ball, then number one, you are probably an NBA exec and it's something that you're really into. And number two, Brandon Miller would be your guy. He's a guy who's going to offer you versatility on both ends of the floor. He's an absolute sniper. He's got the right mentality. He's afraid of nobody. And he plays really, really hard. So when you talk about mental makeup, when you're when you're thinking about high level prospects, he's got that. You talk about measurables, I think he's going to have that. You talk about efficiency and talent, he has all that. And so if you're interested in those things, you should probably take Brandon Miller.
Very well said. Very well said. The guy is an awesome prospect. He's one of my favorite prospects that I've evaluated in recent memory. And I hope everybody, you know, has enjoyed this episode as much as I think we did. And if you have questions, I urge you to go back and, you know, rewatch his film. You know, even if you don't have, you know, access to Synergy or Instat, there's always, you know, channels where you can watch full games on YouTube. You know, that's how I used to do all my scouting before I had access to these tools. I used to literally just watch the games on YouTube and rewind and pause. And, you know, there's some really valuable stuff. And so he's a lot of fun. And obviously he's not some sleeper prospect or anything like that. He's, you know, probably going to be the number three pick in the draft. So, but with that said, the debate on whether he should go two or three this year is a fun one. One I didn't fully expect. one I didn't expect myself to turn on, but you know, it's one of those things. I don't want to just be like, I'm gonna play it safe, because where's the risk in me just saying Scoot is the number two guy because he's supposed to be the number two guy? He might be the number two guy, but right now my gut is telling me that I like Brandon Miller more. And so and that's in a vacuum. Again, it fit, context, all that stuff. But and I fully expect Scoot to be really, really, really awesome player. But Brandon Miller is my number two guy right now. So that's it. All right. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review, comment, share. That would be awesome. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you hit that like button. Thank you for watching and rocking with us. As always, subscribe to the channel. We have so much NBA draft content coming up. The draft lottery is in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a really, really fun draft season. We have draft guide news, you know, coming soon. We're going to have new merch, the whole thing. So Albert, tell the people where they could find you before we sign out.
You can find me at Alberto with an E Gim on Twitter. You can find me at GTGNBA on Instagram as well.
And you can find me at Corey Tulliba at the NBA Draft Dude on TikTok and Instagram. Been posting some stuff. Just watched a bunch of prospects work out over this weekend. And I think we're going to get them for some film sessions soon, which will be exciting. So, yeah, make sure you're locked in to the YouTube channel, to the podcast feed, to everything we're doing at No Ceilings. Fun time, y'all. Appreciate you rocking with us. The Tylers are on tomorrow. Until that time, we're out. Peace.
Peace.